Thank you for joining us for the Realcom Digital Twins webinar. I'm Sarah Bemperat with Realcom. We'll learn education is supported by our gold sponsors, Skype Foundry, Invicara, Buildspace, and Cecilio, and we'll learn more about these companies throughout the session. Today's webinar moderator is Tom Schirkler from Intelligent Buildings. Tom is the co-founder and principal of Intelligent Buildings, a smart building services company. Intelligent Buildings has consulted on over $2 billion of new construction, and their active customers have over 2 billion square feet of existing portfolios. Tom, thank you very much for moderating, and I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thanks, Sarah. This is one of those topics that really allows us to peer around the corner a little bit in real estate technology, and as with other prop tech solutions, you know, the early going is a little noisy and very unclear. So, you know, we're gonna cut through this today. And some of the first issues are, you know, what is it? You know, is it for new construction or facility management? Is it BIM, visualization? Is it a simulation? Is it big data? Do I need a new operating model, new vendors, new contractors? I mean, this is not unlike saying the terms green or smart that are still a little bit nebulous today. So really, like those other terms in digital twins, you need to consider why it matters to you and your organization and how you might use what you hear today in more defined use cases for yourself. So I'd advocate that today worry a little bit less about what it is and more about how the technology concepts you see can translate into value for you. And again, kind of can consider the use. You'll hear some use cases today, but also you'll hear a lot about the technology and the angles and the dimensions of this, and really be thinking, how might this apply to my organization and my use cases that I could develop around this. So, having said that, I want to yield most of the time back to our presenters and the questions. So I'm going to jump right in and introduce our first speaker, who is Charles Mata at GSA. And Charles is the director of the Center for Building Information Programs at GSA and deputy CIO for the Public Buildings IT Services. He previously served as director for GSA's Federal Buildings and Modernizations, overseeing a program of over 120 public buildings nationwide. And Charles is also a former president of AIA Northern Virginia and a fellow of the American Institute of Architects for his industry contributions to the practice of architecture. Charles, that sounds like a really good person to kick off what digital twins are and how you're viewing it. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Tom. Can you hear me?
You bet.
Okay. Very good. So good afternoon, everyone on the East Coast, and good morning, everyone everywhere else, I assume. Digital twins is a topic that has been hot for several years now, for at least three. GSA is a federal agency that manages about 375 million square feet nationwide in 2,000 communities. So certainly it is a topic that we're very interested in. And even though we have not quite adopted the full meaning of digital twin on our own portfolio, but we are in research mode on this, exploration mode. And I thought that it would be useful to share with the audience some definitions or some description of what the research industry, IT research industry, what the hardware industry, and what the software industry define as digital twin. So, let's see here. I'm not able to advance. Can somebody advance for me? Okay, there's good. So Gartner is an IT research organization nationwide, one of the leaders, if not the premier leader of IT research. They think that there are four elements of a digital twin. It's the model of the physical object. So in this definition, it talks about something that's not just about the building necessarily. It's data from and about the object. It's unique to one-to-one alignment with the digital twin and its physical object. Physical object in this conversation here is really the facility commercial real estate space, or it might be institutional space, and the ability to monitor the specific object. From an IT point of view, they've done quite a bit of research. This is what they see as what captured digital twin, which is still in, you know, being further refined and defined by industry as offerings, you know, come to light. And some of the speakers that are going to follow are going to show us what has come to light so far in this space. Next, please. Siemens, who plays a big role in sensors and the like, defines digital twins as used data from sensors installed on physical objects to determine the object's real-time performance, its operating conditions, and changes over time. Obviously, this definition captures what building owners really care about. So in that definition, three types of digital twin are at play. There's the one that's about the product. The product in this case is the facility, the real estate, the production, and the performance within that facility. So far we've heard from the IT research organization, from the essentially hardware and software organization, and if we can go to the next click and hear from the software industry. So one of the three top leading software industry providers of CAD software and BIM software is Bentley. Their definition is a little bit different, and I'm bringing all of these things so that the audience is aware of which segment of the industry you're hearing from when you hear certain definitions. So for Bentley, a digital twin requires data from operational technologies, that's the OT, so it can understand the current state of the project or asset. Combining the data from engineering technologies into a digital twin enables simulation. So clearly this is something where Bentley and its competitors, Autodesk and Graphisoft, don't necessarily provide the digital twin service, but they provide the basis that the digital twin can build on, so that users can try out different scenarios or predict the performance of an asset, obviously after it's completed. Bentley plays a big role in the planning by owners and architects and engineers in the industry to basically conceive, design, and have the documents that enable the facility owner to build that facility, and then from there on, that set of deliverables that are produced through the BIM and through the CAD can be applied to where the digital twin, and in some cases perhaps it's not, and I'll touch on that. So before we go to the next slide, I wanted to touch a little bit on BIM very quickly. BIM is an intelligent 3D model-based process comprising the architecture, the structure, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing assemblies that enable the architect, engineer, contractor to plan, design, quantify, quantity takeoff, bid, and construct a facility. A BIM is used to predict and determine the 4D component and the 5D component, et cetera, scenarios up to the ND, 4D meaning the building in time, the 5D is the cost estimation. ANSI BOMA, which is an industry standard, allows through the capture of BIM to determine the net, the gross, rentable areas, and many other aspects that are needed for the commercial real estate. Also, the BIM provides the evaluation and the various scenarios to capture what the energy consumption of the facility when it's completed would be. So it works on the intent, and for existing facilities, a BIM can be produced from a laser scan. Obviously, this one produces the 3D aspect of it. So we are in 2019. A BIM is essential for the development of a building through the construction completion stage, and a commercial real estate BIM provides value for the portfolio, for the leasing organization within the CRE, and design and construction. So now what is needed for the facility operation stage? And this is where, what gets us back to the topic of potentially the use of digital twin. Next, please. From the owner's perspective, next. The digital twin, in unpacking its potential, touches on the cybersecurity component. So we as an organization, federal agency that that has civilian tenants that that are federal though, federal civilian, the cybersecurity concern is a large one. How do vendors in industry, as we were exploring digital twins, how do the vendors address and manage the controlled environment for us? Next, please. So the more intelligent and connected buildings become, the more entry points there are for hackers, and that ties specifically to this this item. So aligning the digital strategy to the business strategy, this is another thing that we have to explore as we study the offerings in the industry. Do you need to have a data or digital strategy to have a digital twin? Next, please. And then the value of that digital twin in the IoT connected smart cities. Is there a value from the digital twin that you produce and the neighbor and the building that next door produces in connecting to city infrastructure those IoT components and making it available to stakeholders within the organization? Next. Next, please. So BIM technology for visualization data. The question to these organizations that we would have, can you create a digital twin without getting a BIM from the owner? What steps would you take? Next. Next, please. And then the convergence between BIM and digital twin. What content in a BIM is essential for a digital twin if you are going to use that? And then what expectations for the future of digital twins in terms of space occupancy, utilization, and reprogramming of equipment, devices, and self-tuning the automated building? So all of these are the questions that we're exploring now. That are essential for us before we fully embark on the adoption of digital twin in our 1,500 plus owned buildings. Tom, I turn it back over to you.
Oh, very good, thanks. And if you don't mind, a question I have, I got a lot of questions, but just one while we're transitioning the slides here. You said you're sort of in a research mode right now, but when you look at, you know, you have groups like design and construction, facility management, IT, and I believe you have a group called Portfolio, kind of the leasing group. Do you have any insights now as to where procurement might emanate from when you get some of the answers that are on your slides? Do you have any idea what group might solicit the procurement for that kind of thing?
Yes, absolutely. So obviously, the idea needs to be sold to all of the business lines within our organization. It would need to go through the governance process, which is signed off on or reviewed and assessed by all parties, all members. However, when it comes to the actual acquisition associated with that, this is when the IT organization and the facility management organization partner to pursue that. So it's a partnership between the two.
Yeah, and I imagine, even though you have insights, obviously, into your group, that it's going to be probably a little bit different for everybody, but you're already thinking about that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, great. I don't know if we've got Thano online. Let me see, Sarah, do we have Thano online? Yeah, good. Okay. I'm going to enter. Thank you, Charles, and more questions in the Q&A at the end here, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce Thano Lambrinas from Quadreal. And Thano leads Quadreal's digital innovation team and is focused on the overall digital strategy in new real estate developments and within the existing built environments, supporting Quadreal's digital aspirations across all asset classes, both domestically and internationally. And his goal is to identify and implement technologies that drive key business outcomes, bringing significant value to the assets that Quadreal owns and operates, and enabling a differentiated customer experience, which I think is a very interesting aspect to all of this. But Thano, let's hear your thoughts.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. I just wanted to start off and put this slide up to give those on the call who aren't familiar with Quadreal a little information about the company. We currently manage around 40 million square feet of commercial space and 12,000 residential units in Canada domestically. Internationally, we've got about 48,000 residential units and a significant portfolio of commercial and residential through partnerships. Total assets under management as of 2017, which is a bit old, is almost $28 billion, and that's grown significantly since this is put up. And we have about 1,200 employees across 23 cities and 17 countries. So the reason I wanted to frame a bit about Quadrill is to show, with a company in a portfolio this large, why digital twins, the potential for digital twins, as is as important as it is. To echo some of the notes that Charles shared, we've, full disclosure, haven't implemented a full digital twin strategy, but are very much in the early stages of identifying opportunities for pilot. So again, digital twins, the definition, it's very loose and it depends on who you talk to. I stole the first bit from GE. I'm not going to read it, but the intent really of the idea of a digital twin is to optimize performance and achieve improved business outcomes. We're talking about, and user experience, of course. We're focused on outcomes, not technology for technology's sake. And when I think of it in terms of real property assets, there's a number of different opportunities in the way digital twins can be set up, in the fact that they can be hierarchical, representing an entire city or our entire portfolio potentially, a building within that portfolio, a room within that building, a piece of equipment within that room, and so on and so forth. Each element of a twin can be visualized using 3D BIM technology, as Charles talked about, but it's not exclusively BIM. And when we talk about digital twins, we're not just talking about a 3D representation. That can be represented in a 2D fashion as well. The important piece is that it includes all elements of static data, dynamic data, processes, relationships, analytics, AI and machine learning models, and connectivity to a wide variety of other related data sources. And when we look at those other data sources, I put this together the other day thinking about all of the different data sources that make up what we would define as a digital twin. There are a number of them you see on the slide there. So a twin of a real estate asset could represent its position in the city for development planning, enable spatially visualized detailed leasing information, display equipment performance, energy utilization with real-time and static data. It can also potentially serve as command and control and an analytics engine for various building systems, display spatial locations of infrastructure, pipes and electrical potentially behind the walls for maintenance and renovations, and maybe even connect to capital planning tools. So the use cases of a digital twin are pretty significant and almost endless. What our opportunity here is to create a sandbox in which we can run energy optimization strategies, for example, or turn on various front and back of house use cases, the idea of through integrations, that if this, then that happens, and test that in the digital twin environment before it's put in production in the real built environment. So really, if we look at the why and how from our perspective, the why is a big opportunity for capital and OPEX savings when we deploy in new developments by better coordinating the trades, enhanced commissioning opportunities, and improved handover to operations. On the operational side, we have an opportunity to lower costs and increase the efficiency of our people. Through data-driven maintenance activities, we can reduce planning cycles and costs for renovations, retrofits, and TI work. We don't have to rediscover the building every time we need to do work because we have an accurate digital model of equipment relationship, feeds to, fed from things on the various different systems in the building and the location of those pieces of equipment. It can serve as the single source of truth for building and equipment data, obviously amalgamated from a number of other different sources and a number of opportunities for AI and machine learning analytics. When we think about the how, the first thing we need to do is create a well-defined data strategy. Normalizing the data, integrating the data, both live and static. Then we would go through a process of connecting those real-time data streams through a robust and low-latency infrastructure and create a marketplace for various point solutions that will make up different elements of that digital twin. For new developments, we talk about ensuring that the data strategy is implemented early and across all the stakeholders so that when the project's handed over to operations, it's done so in a fashion that the digital twin is ready for deployment and use. For existing buildings, it's an incremental strategy, rolling out the data strategy for live and static sources. And then when the last element really is that visualization piece, that either 2D or 3D model, that all of that information gets connected into for usage by various different parties. The Gartner hype cycle has digital twins right on the peak. So that's an interesting spot in the market, and we're starting to see a number of companies pop up claiming different elements of delivering different elements of digital twins. But at this stage, you know, there's obviously a lot of success stories, but there's also many failures. So there's an inherent risk in picking a horse too early, but that doesn't mean we don't want to do something. Really, in order to be successful, we feel a quadrille is, to Charles's point a little earlier, is there's multi-business unit support required. We're talking about facilities, construction, development, IT, operations, and anyone, any other stakeholder, potentially leasing, HR and others as well, to effectively influence the data and the twin so that it's successful for all people interacting with it. Change management is obviously a massive thing that we need to undertake when we're implementing and looking at technologies like this. And from our perspective, influence on the product roadmap of those that we partner with to help deliver the twins is an important piece as well. So with that, I hope that there was some good information in there for those listening, and I'll hand it back to you, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And that, boy, that hype cycle slide makes you a little nervous about, like you said, about what, you know, we're right at the peak of that graph. So what is it time to do now? So let me try to put some words in your mouth, because your slide with all of the inputs where you mention the nearly endless number of use cases, is it important then, and I even kicked off the webinar today with this concept about use cases, is it important in your view to really work to narrow the number of use cases so you can get to some doability? Has that been a challenge for you?
I mean, certainly. I think that we're driving outcomes. The whole point of implementing technologies is to drive outcomes. And so from a use case perspective, we're focused on use cases in two larger buckets that then distill down to smaller elements. And those two large buckets are operational efficiency and tenant experience. And really, if you were to draw a Venn diagram that had either one of those in either circle, where they intersect, where we can identify operationally beneficial use cases that also improve the experience of our tenants are the ones that we're hyper-focused on. And those that have communicable financial benefit are also at the top of the list. So we're trying to go through that endless list of use cases that I alluded to and identify those that are of highest value and focus on those first, and then systematically work our way through as we roll out our digital strategy into the portfolio.
That's great. And one more, if you could, well, there's lots more, but one more until we transition to the questions. But you mentioned the single source of truth, which you hear a lot. And is it fair to say that there's not a technology constraint to that as the building goes forward in time, but that there's a cultural constraint, meaning that every contractor and property manager and everybody that moves an outlet or a VAV box or a wire has to get into the digital twin, or it's not a single source of truth? So is that a cultural constraint, not a technical constraint?
I think it's a cultural and a process. It's a cultural constraint and a requirement to ensure that from a change management perspective, there's a huge focus on processes and how we manage those elements of non-dynamic data, the examples that you gave, I moved an outlet or I moved a wall, and what processes we put in place to ensure that that always gets effectively and quickly put back into the twin so that it doesn't become stale like so many of our building drawings that are rolled up in the basement, or even the building information models, the BIMs that we've developed for new construction that halfway through the project, or pardon me, at the end of the project before handover, a few months into operational are already out of date and unusable. So yeah, so I think it's a combination between truly across different user groups and different stakeholders, as well as working the change management angle.
So to state the obvious then, that just for the audience, that will eventually be very much a part of contractor procurement requirements and evaluation, compliance with their contract requirements, and even auditing that in order for this to stay the truth, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing our best to essentially upend the traditional construction design, procurement, deployment, and commissioning methodology so that we can benefit from this technology moving forward, because the existing state of the entire supply chain in its current form is not conducive to effectively deliver what we would define as a digital twin. So we have to go right back to the beginning with respect to new development and upend a lot of what's been held as, you know, the norm and the status quo of how buildings and assets are stood up, which is no small task.
Yeah, decades of doing it a certain way. But that was very well said, and that was the essence of my question. So thank you so much. We're going to jump into a you bet. We're going to jump into a video right now, I believe, Sarah.
SkySpark is an analytics platform that automatically analyzes data from automation systems, meters, sensors, and other smart devices in order to identify issues, faults, trends, correlations, and opportunities for operational improvements and cost reduction. SkySpark works with data of all types, whether it be live data from automation systems, smart meters, web services, or historical data from CSV files and databases. SkySpark can also be used in a wide variety of applications, including energy and resource management and reporting, monitoring-based commissioning, equipment fault detection, energy analysis, load profiling, facility benchmarking, and asset performance tracking. Visit skyfoundry.com today and start finding what matters.
Okay, great. And I'm going to introduce John Petsy now with Sky Foundry. John is a partner and co-founder at Sky Foundry, the developers of SkySpark, an analytics platform for building energy and equipment data. John has over 35 years of experience in building automation, energy management, and M2M. Having served in senior level positions for manufacturers of hardware and software products. At Sky Foundry, he helps owners take advantage of advanced operational analytics to create truly intelligent and efficient buildings, and a longtime supporter of these webinars. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks, everybody, for the opportunity to be here. I think this is a hot topic, as we said, but also one that is fuzzy, and I think that's because there's so many different components to it. So I want to talk about some of the components to the topic today, and actually I'll be using the term digital replicas. And you know, if you have a twin, it means there's two of you, right? In reality, I think there's many replicas of the digital data related to buildings, and I think that's the future we're heading to. It isn't just a single twin. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, the term digital twin, I'd say, you know, if you did a word association game, it's most typically associated with a 3D model of a facility with the essential digital information overlaid on it, embedded in it, et cetera. And they're very valuable tools, but as one of our speakers has already mentioned, it isn't just about the 3D side of it. You know, I live in a 3D world when I go outside my office, but when I'm navigating with a map, I'm navigating with a 2D representation of the world, because that's more effective for that purpose, right? So there's another type of digital twin or digital replica, and the one I want to talk about is a complete digital representation of all the equipment systems and their operational data, their relationships to each other, their relationship to the occupant environment, and then, of course, the tools you need to be able to work with that data. And, you know, this first step in achieving this really is to get and unify all of this operational data. And one of the things I think we're seeing, you know, there's great promise in smart, intelligent buildings, but even with modern buildings, with communicating devices, these equipment systems are often siloed on their own. So you might buy system A, B, C, and D, and they might do a great job for you on their own. But, historically and even today, they're highly siloed. They're not combined together. For example, the building automation system, which has the utility usage data, might not have the cost data, right? So with these different APIs and communication processes, protocols, different data repositories, web-based or cloud-based, on-premise-based, et cetera, they're not all unified. So that's really the first step. We have to unify all of the data if we're going to have a digital replica that we can work with, right? And, skipped ahead there. So, the goal that we want to achieve is to provide operators with all the information they need easily, intuitively, right? That's the whole goal. If I'm an energy manager, I want to look at, analyze energy data forecasts against weather, all of those things, right? But if I'm the person responsible for the central plant, I need access to that, and maybe I have more interest in real-time data and historical data, et cetera. So this idea of bringing it all together is key, because in order to facilitate all this, we've got to bring all the data together. And I'll bring up another term that we hear. We're hearing a lot about data lakes. And I was at a recent conference, and I thought it was interesting. One of the speakers spoke about that. He said, do you have a data lake, or do you really have a data swamp? And the issue there is, if you're just throwing data into a place you can store it, you haven't made it usable. You haven't normalized it. You haven't given it semantics that will allow you to make it utilized. So there's a difference between the single massive database or data lake and actually having brought the data together in a normalized, useful fashion so that we can support the needs of the technicians, financial managers, et cetera, for the things they care about related to the data that's part of their purview in their job. And so, the digital data replica is really what we need to provide for them so that they can do their job against all the data they need independently from other people who have other needs and are working with data in other ways. So if we're going to get to that goal, what are some of the key requirements that we need? Well, the first is we need the ability to connect to all of these diverse data sources, automation systems, metering systems, new IoT devices, etc. Because we have to be able to get the data, the digital data, together as a first step, right? So communication is a key part of that, right? But then when we get it, we have to deal with the other side of dissimilar data, which is the idea of normalizing it. And that means to make it self-describing so that the users and their applications understand what the data is and all its attributes, relationships, right? Which meter is associated with which equipment system, right, and which tariff structure, et cetera. And, we're a supporter of the Haystack standard for the normalization and semantic modeling of data. So the next is how we are going to provide the use of that data, right? There's both live data and there is historical data, right? And, data becomes historical, 1 millisecond after it was live, right? But a lot of things you need to do in the building transcend that. We need to look at our historical energy use against weather data to be able to predict the future, but we also need to look at the live data to identify, immediate issues that are happening. And so I think there's a key, then there's another component of that is, can we allow the operators working with these digital replicas to work offline, right? I may be an energy manager doing sophisticated modeling and analysis. I don't need to be and probably shouldn't be online communicating with those systems. I should be using the data up to the last hour, the last 15 minutes, whatever. And what we find is this is very important for people who may be subject to interruptible networks, right? Even the internet is interruptible, right? They don't want their job to be stopped by that. They'd like to continue working with that data, work with that replica of the data, even if it's not online. So the result that we want to get to is have all the data, have it unified, have it seamless in an environment where the different constituencies across the organization can work with that, from maintenance and repair to servicing to analysis to analytics and application of advanced machine learning, et cetera. And only by bringing it together, normalizing it, and creating a full digital twin replica of all of that data can we achieve that goal? So we're looking at it from the data and the relationships point of view, how all the equipment's related, how the data's related, from real-time data in the last second all the way back through the historical data that might go back years and years that enable us to analyze how our building performs against the design. We're often brought in with buildings that are designed to be net zero, but they may not perform that way immediately out of the box because they're complex, they need to be tuned, the model needs to be compared against the actual performance. So Tom, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, John. A couple of questions there that are, I think, are going to be interesting for folks is that you essentially said that a digital twin or replica doesn't have to be 3D. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying, yeah, that's a type of, you know, if you're trying to deal with the 3D aspects of your facility, you need a 3D model. But operators are really dealing with the data and the relationships, right? I'm in the basement. I need to know I have a problem on the fourth floor. I don't need a 3D picture of the building to know I have three floors above me. So it's another aspect of it.
No, I hear you. That's right. I think if most people Google the topic and hit images, you'd see a bunch of cool 3D things, which is an aspect to it. But it is interesting how, again, back to Thanos' slide with all the data sources and use cases, it is an aspect of it. And the other thing that you mentioned with your word replica is it doesn't have to be live data. I think that's also a conception people might have.
Yeah, you need, you know, any building needs both. But so much work can be done against these digital replicas without them being live. And we often find you don't want those analysts to even have a live connection to a building. They might be in a different organization. They don't need to be. They can work against the replica.
Yeah, great. And we'll get to the Q&A. I think we need to talk about the sources of data as another topic. Thank you, John. That was helpful. I'm going to introduce Rick with Built Space. And Rick is the... is the co-founder and CEO of Built Space, a secure collaboration and workflow platform for built environment. Rick brings over 35 years of experience as a serial entrepreneur, pioneering software and web-based information services within the environmental, building, and construction information sectors. And Rick, what's your two cents on this?
Thank you, Tom. The term digital twins is really only been commonly used since about September of 2016. And as we're seeing, there's a lot of confusion, although some common themes that are coming up about what a digital twin is and what value it's bringing to customers and facilities operators. So in our own case, in early 2015, we created our first fully integrated digital building as a joint research project with the University of British Columbia. We had BIM integration, we had point clouds, we had integration with the Honeywell building automation system, over 2,000 sensor points. We even had occupants able to control their own lighting and comfort in their own workspaces. And we too had very little idea of what a digital twin actually was. That project was really technically successful, but it proved of little practical financial value. This was 4 years ago. But now we take a much more practical approach to solving real problems. Instead of one building on campus at UBC, we're now digitizing the entire campus, 4,000 acres, and over 640 buildings and infrastructure systems. And we're seeing measurable improvement in operational efficiency, in some cases up to 70%. Let's change this one. So for us, digital twins are core to asset lifecycle management. They're not just another name for a BIM. They organize data, similar to what John suggested, in a hierarchical fashion, creating a single source of truth. They integrate people and processes, not just data. and store data about each physical asset. They change how people work. They provide a financial view of individual assets. Let me show you a couple of quick examples. So this is real data for a 14-acre campus, about 35 buildings. Most of those buildings are over 180 years old. They are not smart buildings. And here, digital twins are enabling safe, efficient, and informed field services for the technicians and facilities operators on that campus. This has resulted in over 50% reduction in preventative maintenance costs in the last year. So you'll notice along the bottom timeline there, there's a timeline that covers about a three-hour period. The service technicians in that time period touched 38 different assets, which are summarized on the top. This quality of data and the accuracy of the maintenance and service that happened, and this is really change management in action. It's happening as you speak. It's only possible because we have essentially digitized the entire campus with all the assets and made that available both to the facilities operator and the service contractor. So if you think about that, we're not digitizing, we're not creating a digital twin of an individual building. We are creating digital twins of each asset, component, system, structure, even the entire campus in this case. But what about processes? Enterprise organizations, even people, they're all part of that digital twin. And as we saw at in the initial slide, hundreds of millions of new IoT assets, some of them physical, some of them virtual, VPNs and so forth. If it's an asset that needs to be managed, it needs its digital twin. So we have a very different outlook on what a digital twin is. Here's another example at UBC, District Energy System. It's a composite digital twin with thousands of individual assets comprising a single system, but that system is connected to buildings, other systems, and other processes. So we need to think in terms of a holistic view. Here we've seen up to a 70% reduction in cost per service intervention. Due to having digital twins in place. It's something that we can't do with traditional work systems. So with digital twins, we can visualize data from sensors and people. We can measure operational efficiency, asset condition, service transactions costs, safety and compliance, production, productivity, energy and water, bring it all together. So just very quickly, taking a practical approach, you know, digital twins are here. They're not all jazz hands. We currently host over 150,000 individual equipment and system assets. Based on our experience, we need to have this very practical approach. Expect that your assets are not a BIM. Expand your scope from a single building to your entire asset portfolio, equipment level all the way up. Concern yourself with cybersecurity. There are many, many exposed IoT devices and building automation systems that do not belong on the internet and the digital twin can help secure those and keep things as simple as possible, but no simpler, and reimagine how people work and collaborate, and you'll find some very interesting outcomes. So, Tom, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you. And a couple of questions, if I could. You just said something about cybersecurity, which is obviously a very hot topic, especially if you were at RealCom pre-conference this year. But how are you saying that digital twins help that as opposed to create a bigger problem?
Well, it really comes down to you need to keep your enterprise systems and your control systems off of the internet, yet you need to collaborate. And so the digital twin, in our view, is that platform where you can secure the data that you need to exchange, but keep everything else away from people. And that's really what it comes down to.
So almost its own little internet or connecting hub, you're saying, for all of the data.
Exactly, and integrate with that digital twin, and we've seen that. In fact, last week, John Petsy was at a session where we were displayed an integrated SkySpark built space solution, but it can be done very securely if it's done properly using secure firewalls and proper IT security.
Yep, and just real quick before we move on to the next one, you said 70% efficiency gains. Can you give a short explanation of that? That was a big number.
Absolutely. So in the case of example was doing compliance inspections for fire safety equipment, going from paper work orders for individual assets that were given out every morning to a complete digital solution where they knew which ones were completed and which ones were not. Went from over 60 minutes per inspection to 22 minutes on average. And the one diagram actually showed the percentage complete in real time.
Yep.
Huge
okay.
Gain.
That's helpful. Yeah. So overall operational approach. That's helpful. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to introduce Marty with Invacara, and Marty works with commercial real estate clients to understand their needs and challenges, and then translate that knowledge into strategies for digital twin solutions, and ultimately successful projects and compelling stories. Marty has helped bring technology products to market for more than 25 years. Before joining Invacara, he served in marketing, product management, and business development roles for a wide range of software companies and founded two consulting firms. So, Marty, you're next up to tell us what you think about digital twins and how you do it.
All right, Tom. Thanks a lot. Well, so, wow, first of all, a lot of great points of view. But let's dig into what a digital twin is from Invacara's perspective. Just a side note, I was at the RealCom conference, and the running joke was if you ask five different people what a digital twin is, you get at least 10 different answers, you know? So I think we're still seeing that here today. You know, there's maybe a little bit of confusion out there, but there's definitely a ton of different perspectives. And I think, you know, that's not a bad thing. And I think that it's driven by the fact that, as some of the other speakers have kind of touched on, a digital twin isn't just one thing. You know, at the end of the day, it's going to end up being a set of integrated solutions. But let me drop into our definition. So it's what we look at a digital twin is it's a virtual copy of your building, right? That's going to bring together all of the information that you need, whether it's models, plans, documents, data, all of that together in one source. That then can become that can then integrate with other data sources to become a data hub for your building. And then ultimately, and I think this is where it gets really interesting, is building solutions, creating solutions. It's not out-of-the-box software, but a platform that lets you essentially transform the way you do business with your portfolio. So that's our vision of a digital twin, but how do you get there, right? I think that's a huge question. And now it's still early days, but what we found is that our clients have taken some very common steps, and based on what we've seen from them, we've created a framework for digital twin maturity, and here's what we're seeing. So when you start out, I think the first level of digital twin maturity is the strategy. This is where it all starts. And at this stage, our clients are asking, what are the business outcomes we're looking for? What are the results we want to achieve? And can we put all that together in an information strategy for the business? So what we found is it's absolutely critical to create an information model that identifies the right information and the right stakeholders to provide it. Okay, so at this stage, essentially what you end up with is a template that clearly identifies what's required to reach your goals. Okay. And, you know, going through this exercise is incredibly valuable. It makes our clients look at their buildings in different ways, right, and identify ways to improve operations, you know, streamline transactions, so on and so forth. Now, interestingly, we found that it's not always a technology solution that drives the value. It could be an organizational change. It could be a new service offering. It could be a resource issue, whatever. But once you have this strategy in place, you're ready to take the next step and create what we call an asset twin, or basically a virtual building. So at this level, we're using the plan from the information strategy to create a virtual copy of the building. And with an asset twin, now you know what's in your building. You know where it is, how it's supposed to perform, how to maintain it. Everything's in one place. And so the business value at this stage, well, this is actually where most of our customers are today. And they have multiple solutions, multiple use cases. By far the most common, and a lot of people have touched on this, is driving maintenance efficiency. So the asset twin serves as a digital building manual, if you will, for internal O&M teams or even external FM vendors as well. We also see our clients using the asset twin as a digital data room for transactions. We had one client had a tenant, prospective tenant, send them a 50-page due diligence request for a building. Without an asset twin, they were running around to trying to dig up this information. It took them months to respond. Now, with everything in the asset twin, they're telling us they can respond much more quickly to tenant requests. And, you know, of course, anything you can do to help speed up a transaction is a huge win. Level three is what we call an operations twin, and it's just continuing to build here. But one thing to keep in mind, and we touched on this, and I think several of the others have touched on it, there's never going to be a single digital twin solution that does everything you need to run your building. It's going to be multiple systems. And this is where integrating is key, right? It's critical to tie those systems together. The operations twin serves as a data hub for our clients. It lets them bring together key pieces of data from what are typically siloed systems to give them a 360-degree view of operations. So, for example, this just a simple case could be joining reactive repair costs logged in a maintenance system with energy costs from an energy management system to get that total picture of operating costs, right? Now, also at this stage, we're seeing our clients build custom apps to leverage and extend this unified data. Great example, we've got a client in Singapore that's building a custom mobile app to manage inspections. And so instead of having information from inspections locked in paper, they're going to get digital data that they can track and trend over time and join with other data sources as well. So at the end of the day, aggregating all that data lets you build a building intelligence dashboard that, you know, provides some pretty amazing insights. The next stage is what we're calling a performance twin. And now what's going on here is we're taking the data hub from the operations twin and connecting it to real-time systems. Could be occupancy sensors, newer IoT systems, older BAS systems, whatever. Now the goal here isn't to replace those existing systems. Instead, we want to get the relevant sensor data. And just like the FM and real estate software, these real-time systems tend to be siloed. So we're basically expanding that data hub concept to converge software data and sensor data. So Maybe you're getting a ton of too hot, too cold requests from a building. You can compare those requests against the sensor data from the BMS, right, to quickly isolate and correct the problem. We've got several clients at this stage, and they expect the business value to here to be significant as well. Just adding this data to their dashboard from the operations twin and continuing to tune the performance of the building. Now, the last stage is a platform to kind of reach that holy grail of digital transformation, right? This is where people start thinking about things like applying AI and machine learning to how the building operates by leveraging that rich data set in the performance twin. Everybody's talking about this in the industry, but to be honest, this is aspirational for everyone we've met so far. But the key idea here is you have a platform for continuous improvement, and you can take advantage of future opportunities as they emerge. So just to conclude quickly, coming back full circle, I think you can kind of see why you get 10 different answers, right, for a digital twin. What we're focused on is trying to create a really pragmatic, repeatable way for people to get to the digital twin they need.
That was really helpful, and I appreciate the pragmatic approach, and we mentioned with Anno about the use cases, and it sounds like, you know, pragmatically starting, even though you see this opportunity that's on the slide, starting with some doable use cases. But when you were showing all of the integration from the different types, it was actually occurring to me, what's your perspective and with your customers about the in-building network and connectivity? So if we look to all these levels eventually, isn't that going to require a pretty well put together networking mindset for the building physically?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of topics to address there. And I think the way we're handling that is just by building open APIs that are very flexible and able to interact with those existing systems in the way that makes sense for our clients, so they can get they can extract the data they need from those systems. Does that make sense?
You can't be in the cloud and in the building and everything, but I guess it is a practical, you said pragmatic, but it's a practical thing for your customers, mm-hmm. or digital twin customers to have all of that connectable, at least to get up to the application, to the solution.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some perspective on, you know, John mentioned the data lake and the data swamp and all that.
I might steal that one.
So where does the customer anticipate putting all of this data? I mean, it's obviously all data driven, whether it's, you know, work orders or building systems or sensors and that kind of thing.
Well, for sure. So, like, our clients would use our platform, right? Which we've built. Our platform basically has a flexible schema, a configurable schema.
I'm just going to give a quick introduction for you. Sorry about that. I had a little delay. My apologies. Prabhu is the founder and CEO of Facilio, which is a unified facilities optimization platform that uses IoT and AI to help CREs drive operational and sustainable efficiency across the portfolio. His career spans over 18 years of product, business, and customer experiences focused on enterprise-scale software for IoT-based connected services, sustainable building solutions, and telecom network management. Take it away, Prabhu.
Hi. Thank you, Tom. I will get into how the whole visualization and digital twin concept can be used for connecting insights and actions. So data, everybody gets insights from data, but what is the follow-through action, how visualization can help in a better follow-through action within operations of building. So if you look at the problem, as the other speakers explained, the buildings have a lot of different systems from different vendors, and if the owners have a portfolio of buildings, the portfolio is geographically distributed, and each of these buildings have different automation and control systems. The maintenance and operations of the buildings are outsourced to different contractors, different facilities management teams, and there are different set of SLAs and KPIs. If FM head or an owner wants to operate a portfolio of buildings, they have this problem of how can I visualize all my disparate buildings that are largely scattered? How can I visualize data from different automation systems? How can I follow through that into my operations into different teams with different SLAs? Okay, there's a challenge, and this is what we are solving, where the problem statement is no visibility on portfolio performance. Everything is individual buildings sitting in that building, but there is very lack of visibility across portfolio. Next one is there is no central command and control for operation and maintenance activity. Everything is within that building, and the moment customer has multiple buildings, there is a lot of inefficiency that comes in because they are not able to operate centrally. Act like an IT systems where even large enterprises operate their IT from a central command and control. And because of lack of visualization, it brings in a lot of problems with accountability within the workforce, within the teams on if a problem occurs, who dropped the ball, why that occurred, where is the history, where, how can I avoid repetition of the problems. These are all the major problems today for customers who are larger portfolio. So the way we are addressing is what if customers have contextual data, contextual visualization for their day-to-day operations. If I am an electrician, I should get simple mobile apps which tells me what are the problems, electrical problems, what are the actions I need to take. If I'm an owner, again, a simple mobile app, very contextual, that tells how much money is being spent, what are the critical problems. So contextual visualization is one thing we need to focus on. Next one is, can we look at portfolio-wide? In every other industry, like a transportation or e-commerce, economy of scales has helped, understanding the patterns has helped in form of efficiency. So in buildings, if there is a way to visualize performance across like dozens of buildings, learn from a building which is performing better, the facilities that is performing better, apply that into other buildings. If there is a capability to do that, that is one way where we can actually use smarter visualization to bring in portfolio-wide visibility. The next one is, how do you make actionable insights on the move? Today, everybody is used to, most of the work is getting done in mobile phones now, right from your email to your whatever the office applications. Can facilities managers, facility staffs, will they be able to take actionable insights on the move in form of better visualization, better notifications, better escalation mechanisms? So this is how we are thinking to solve the problems, where can we build a platform, can we deliver a platform which has one, contextual visualization, two, maximum capabilities on the move, three is how can we help customers to look at portfolio-wide visibility. Just to explain on those aspects, what will contextual O&M bring in is in form of mobile apps, in form of context on what role that person plays, what time, what problem they're handling. Next one is portfolios, learn from one building, apply into other buildings. Benchmark your own teams against energy performance, against asset performance, against SLAs. And what actionable analytics will bring in is, how can I take actions on the day? In case of a problem, why should somebody physically go to the building, look into a BMS, and talk to four different people to understand the problem? Why can't they get on the go all relevant information and insights for him or her to go and act on the problem? So we are basically taking a three-step approach here. The first step is connect and predict and then control. The connect part, if you look at the bottom, we have an IoT edge software which can connect with existing BMS, existing BIM, existing HVAC controllers, lighting system, fire safety, water system from different buildings, and that is the connect part. And once we connect, we pull the data to the cloud, and from there we get into prediction of, say, prediction of energy performance, prediction of asset performance. We also have other modules like store, inventory, space management, workforce management, attendance management of the staff. So it's a model where data comes, there is a lot of predictions happening across different streams of the work. And we also have control mechanism where from the cloud, we can take control decision, push it to the edge so that it can go and make set point adjustments. It can switch on equipment for better performance then and there. Yeah, so that is my presentation. We can go into the questions.
Good. Thank you, Prabhu. So a couple questions, if you don't mind, before we get into the general questions. You know, it to state the obvious, but we talked about this cultural and challenge of keeping a single source of truth, and it would seem to me that work order management, tight integration and information from work order management and even project management systems is really important. Is that fair to say?
Yes. So what we observed is the data is already there, but how do we, insights are also coming where there are a lot of tools that can analyze data and insights. But if there is a mechanism where those insights are actioned then and there, and there is contextual information, that's where we thought the work order management tightly integrated with sustainability, with asset health, along with other aspects like inventory store, everything tightly integrated. That is when customers can actually have seamless flow of insights, actions, follow through. So even our own platform gives equal emphasis on the facilities management aspect like work order, ticketing, all the stuff, and also the sustainability management aspect like HVAC optimization, energy optimization, and we integrate and deliver to customers.
Yep, and I've asked, you know, this is kind of a question through all the speakers, but, you know, at a pragmatic or practical way, how would you describe a good starting place for organizations to invest in visualizations or kind of going down this road?
Yeah, so I will start with it. This is Prabhu. Yeah, this is Prabhu from Facilio. From a customer's point of view, I would say they have to first, if you look at traditionally, the option is customers go and install a lot of IoT sensors, additional sensors, retrofitting, which basically makes it difficult because there is a lot of upfront fee into it. The different approach could be, there are a lot of technology available where you leverage what is already there in the building. A lot of buildings of decent size, they already have a lot of automation into them. And there are technologies like even our own product or Sky Foundry where there is option to go and extract that data and create value from there. So once there is a value creation from there, then that motivates, that gives a headway into how can customers go and put more sensors, and the data from that sensor also flows into the day-to-day operations. So I would say the better way is to start with what is existing. Use tech like mobile, cloud, analytics to leverage existing data and then work on top of that.
Okay, very helpful. And I'm going to open it up just a little bit now, if I can swing back around to Charles from the GSA. And I wanted to get your take, Charles, on cybersecurity. We've heard, from the moderator, it's potentially a even bigger challenge. And we heard from Rick that actually it could be a tool. What is the GSA thinking about cybersecurity in this, really voluminous data environment of digital twin?
Well, the key here is for us, other than the fact that we want to protect the data, we also want to be compliant as a federal agency with the legislation that apply in this space. So anything that's in the cloud, and a digital twin is going to be managed in the cloud, then it falls under the cybersecurity policy and act that's associated with FISMA. So when it comes to us, anything that we have to recognize and even make it worthy to pilot, it has to have promise, or has already started the process of FedRAMP. So FedRAMP is something that is required on all federal agencies. Not all of them have quite adopted it in every aspect that they need to adopt it, but it certainly is a requirement. And just being a technology that's moving fast, I think going into it without FedRAMP compliance is highly risky and could sabotage our, you know, our plans, our roadmap in this space. Now, several of the vendors that are out there today, they may say they may comply with SOC 2, SOC 2, and they say, well, what's the difference with FedRAMP? And there is a difference between the two, that they both have mechanism to address the cybersecurity, except that FedRAMP is focused on the security of data within the system, while SOC 2, which is used by many in the real estate industry, they're more focused on the overall system, on the environment, not so much on the data.
Yeah, I gotcha. So that's the you actually have a benefit, if you will, of legislative and regulatory compliance that will kind of keep some bumpers on it for you as an organization.
That's correct.
Yep, good. And Thano, just can you give you, since you're out there developing use cases and researching, what's your view on the, you know, the emerging market itself? And I know you saw it in the hype cycle, but you're a customer and you're researching, you're developing use cases. Where do you think, where's the marketplace right now in terms of viability or doability?
Nascent, I think, in a word, is probably the best way to describe it. I think that, you know, present company excluded, of course, there's a lot of vendors out there that'll claim to have a solution for every single problem that we've ever had. And sometimes we find it's like a hammer just looking for nails. But I think the real opportunity from a real estate ownership perspective is, or management perspective, I should say, is understanding what your tech stack looks like to incorporate some of these vendors that are on this panel today, and how they all fit together and what value they bring ultimately to drive the appropriate use cases. So we're very, very early in the cycle as it pertains to digital twins specifically, and we're starting foundationally because I think that the big potential risk is you jump in with a vendor without without a well-defined strategy, as Marty talked about, as your core. You'll end up spinning your wheels, you'll spend a lot of money, and you'll get no value. So as I tried to illustrate in one of the slides that I put up, data strategy is of utmost importance. Assuming you've first identified what use cases are of highest value, and then moving into your data strategy, identifying everything that's in your ecosystem, appropriately integrating and gathering static data, and then layering on visualization and various AI and analytical tools is probably the path to success. But to answer your question specifically, we're in a very, very nascent stage. So don't be worried if the folks that are listening out there in the real estate space feel like they're behind. They're probably not. There's a lot of learning that we can do together and to get to that utopia of full portfolio management and integrated systems and centralized operation centers.
Yeah, well, your moderator would agree with that strategy part. One more quick question for you, if I could. Have you discussed or do you see a valuation benefit for your assets?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I think that just like anything else, it's because it's in its nascency, it's tough to draw straight lines to financial value. However, it's tantamount to what sustainability and quote-unquote green buildings looked like 10, 15 years ago. It was just going to cost more, and it wasn't something that we should, you know, necessarily consider. And now if you're starting to build if you're building a AAA office, class office in a central business district, if you don't go into LEED Platinum and don't look at and consider Fitwel and don't consider some of these green standards, you're out to lunch. And I think that it's going to be very similar from a digital technologies perspective too. And what we're thinking about is how we can get ahead of that and foundationally enable our assets so that as technologies that do eventually draw lines to communicable value start to pop up, we'll be able to scale them up very quickly and be able to realize that value very quickly. And I believe that that will be translatable to asset value when we're looking to reevaluate.
Yeah, and I think that sounds right. And then John Petsy, you're known for getting lots of operational data, temperatures, energy use, et cetera, and building data points. Can that be correlated to these asset related data, sort of bigger iron, if you will?
Yeah, it is fundamentally. That's how it starts, right? Data is associated with a piece of equipment, and the relationships between the data, the equipment, the building, the floor, whatever the asset structure is, that's fundamental to doing analytics on data, because that's how you determine the relationships between things. And the extent of the asset data can go as far as the owner's vision. Give you an example, right? Maybe we want to compare our portfolio age of the building. How about type of construction? Because I had four different design plans, and how are we doing? How did they? Which ones really met their expected behavior and performance? How about the brand of equipment? Right, not just the equipment, the data is coming from it, but the brand, the age, when it was put in service. So this is all asset data that leads to getting value out of all of the data, right? Just the fact that I have an air handler, by itself, and here's the current temperature, that doesn't tell me much. But if I can look across a portfolio of literally, example, 10,000 of them, and compare, repair cycles, repair costs, repair visits against age, against brand, that's all part of operational analytics. It's much more than just, what's the temperature value.
So, John, is it possible, do you think that some customers might go from the bottoms up, like maybe they're doing energy fault detection, and they've got some of that data, and they're going to build that up through assets, through 3D modeling, and some customers who may do 3D modeling and come back down and see the chiller and then see the system and then get down to the data points either direction?
Exactly. It's coming from all directions, from bottom up and top down. And I think that ties into one of the comments that was made, and if I can, I'm going to offer a counterpoint. Quite frankly, data is, right, we're all agree this is nascent, this is new, this is emerging. Well, I'd say the use of data in society is still emerging, right? There is areas where it's well-developed, well-understood. We don't find that most owners can determine ahead of time what their business cases are because it's new, it's exploratory, right? So I wouldn't limit the process to determine your business cases first, because in many cases, without the insight, you don't know potential business case. I'll give you one quick example, right? Combining actual energy consumption, everybody's got that, right? With rate structure data to determine, Tom, you're in the wrong rate structure in this building. Forget about its efficiency. You picked the wrong rate structure. You're paying a lot more money than you should, right? You didn't know about that. You didn't have that insight before you started, so it wasn't on your business case list. Now, consultants obviously can play a role in helping this, but we often find that exploratory projects with a limited, easily available amount of data are incredibly enlightening to owners and start them on the path of moving to using data, and which moves them down the road of creating digital twins, digital replicas of all of their building and data.
Yeah, well, so maybe playing off of that, Rick, you had mentioned that you suggest to the customer to, don't think about just a building, think about your portfolio, and help me understand. Are you suggesting that an inch deep and a mile wide is a better way to start, or did I hear that wrong?
Yeah, no, I think that there are very few business processes that are entirely within the scope of a single building. And it's much easier to focus on changing processes first than it is to wire up a building or collect building automation data. So, you know, for the low-hanging fruit, the place to start is really looking at okay, how do we operate and maintain this building, and can we work with people first to improve our processes, and then support that with building automation data and as John says, bring the energy and building analytics data into the business process, which is really, you know, where we have started working together, and you know, that I think is a really exciting area, and the ROI comes from operational efficiency that we can actually measure if we've got digital processes that connect all of the different service contractors, and facilities operators, and occupants, and so forth in the building.
No, I get now it makes more sense. Yes, so just a broader thinking about how you're doing business. And I got two questions from Marty and Prabhu, but before I do that, I want to tell all the panelists I'm going to swing back around for each of you to give a 30-second final thought after that. And we'll just take it from the top again. But for Marty, we talked about you know, several times in here, and you did as well, about use cases. And do you have any, you know, just for the layperson out there, some suggested starter use cases? Are there two or three things that are just a good way to get started that are doable use cases, or is that completely customer dependent?
No, I think there's definitely some commonalities. We see a lot of clients starting with trying to solve the handover problem, right? Because there is a link, as Charles mentioned early on, there is a link between BIM and digital twins, right? And if you apply the right information management processes and resources to a development that's in design and construction, you can streamline the gathering of data, you can streamline the management of that data to achieve a very efficient handover, which then sets the stage for any of these digital twin solutions to be successful.
That,
so we
that,
see a lot of
clients sense.
Starting with that.
Yep, no, that makes sense. And I think, you know, ask that because there's so much information. We all said it's unclear to customers what it is, and really just
right.
having a few things to hang your hat on to get started, because just because there's so many opportunities doesn't mean it's all or nothing, right?
Right. Yeah, and the handover, I mean, frankly, that's one that's going to drive, like, immediate value, because you get your building operationally ready on day one before you you take occupancy. Everything's up and running. Whatever your existing systems are for running your building, they all need data. They all need data about that building. And so getting that
that's
in
it.
And getting it in quickly is huge.
Yep. And Prabhu, you know, there's been some discussion about real-time or not real-time, and can you just outline briefly a tangible benefit of visualizing in real-time? What's your quick take on that? Did we lose Prabhu? Okay, let's swing around. That's okay. We're right on schedule anyhow. So if we can take it from the top, and I'll just ask each panelist to give me a, you know, just a 30-second, you know, recap of your thoughts or suggestions for the audience on the topic. Charles, we'll start with you.
Sure. So among public owners, GSA has been one of the first to adopt building information modeling, BIM, and play a central role in shaping it and in working with the software developers in its direction when it was, you know, somewhat premature for, you know, what they were essentially stating that the marketplace can accommodate. We were one of the first to adopt the smart building technology, and I'm saying this to lead to the point that even though among public owners we may not be the first to have adopted digital twin, we will be. It's a matter of time. It's not about if, it's about when. And the only thing that's really truly holding us back has more to do with the environment when it comes to cybersecurity than it is anything else. The technology is extremely promising. It will add tremendous value to how we manage our portfolio. But there is this, you know, key element that we have to cross. We have to have a reasonable solution before we can truly adopt it.
Great. Dana?
Yeah, I'll just echo what I said earlier and the idea of defining your data strategy, because unless you have a solid data strategy, getting all of that information into one place will absolutely result in the swamp-like outcome that I think John that was describing. And take incremental steps, but also while you're pragmatically approaching the potential implementation of an eventual digital twin, I think it was John, to John's point, it doesn't hurt to identify low-hanging fruit point solution use cases to prove out that will eventually back into your twin. So I think it's a number of parallel activities and parallel work streams that will eventually lead you to a place where you can stand up a twin. But data is, I can't stress enough, the data and the definition of that data and the normalization and the naming conventions are of the utmost importance, because as you start to look at what Rick said from portfolio perspective, if all of that's a mishmash, then realizing a twin as an outcome is very unlikely to occur.
That's great. And the remaining four panelists, we could be very brief here. And John, I keep seeing Shrek when I hear about this data swamp, but what's your last thoughts?
You know, I'll just, you know, kind of another perspective on a comment. And we meet people who are at all different stages of their data maturity along this journey. And I think that's the most important thing for our listeners today. Moving to a data-driven facility management platform is a journey. It's not like one capital thing, you can get a quote on and build it and you're done, right? Hey, I need a new chiller plant, get a quote, put it in, all right, it's done. This is a journey, and I think organizations need to approach it that way, and I think that often butts up against a conventional capital budgeting and procurement strategies, and that often becomes a barrier for people getting down this road, right? You're going to normalize all your data. What value am I going to get out of that? You don't know yet, right? Because until you normalize it, you can't use it. And that often butts up against procurement. So I'll leave you with that.
You bet. And Rick, briefly?
Very briefly, people are your most valuable assets. You know, so keep people safe. Keep your things secure from people. And really focus on improving processes first, because they can be applied across your entire portfolio.
I think very, really important. How about you, Marty?
You know, I'll echo what some other folks have said. It's a journey. Have a strategy. I'll say one thing that may seem a little counterintuitive. One of my favorite quotes is, planning is essential, but a plan is useless. It's an Eisenhower quote. But the idea there is create a plan, go after that plan, but be flexible when you're out in the field and be open to new opportunities, because you'll find things, you'll learn things as you go that you never expected, you know. So.
Yep, excellent. And Prabhu, briefly, please. Oh, we lost him earlier.
I think he had to. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's okay. I just want to say this is a really tough topic, very important, and I can tell you we're in the consulting business. This is one of the best discussions of the topic that we have seen. So many, many thanks to the panelists for your time and for your expertise. And any questions that we didn't get to that were sent in by the audience, we will reply to offline. And thank you again, Sarah.
Thank you, Tom. And I can just echo what you just said. Really great discussion today. Great presentations. Really appreciate all the time that went into preparing them. So special thanks to our sponsors. And then I would also encourage you to sign up for next week's webinar, which is on alternative workplace options. And we will be talking about co-working and space as a service, but we'll actually take the view from the owners